You were the poet laureate of Redmond, Washington, the town that's home to Microsoft. You've never lived in Redmond.
I have not.
You never lived in Redmond, but you were poet laureate there, and that's the way they do it in Redmond. One experience that happened there during your tenure was essentially a hate crime. You write about it in the book. You also write about, quote, "the sensitivities of working with a municipal government affected my ability to be completely effective in my role." So, I think the incident is very interesting.
Yeah.
What you had hoped to do and was not able to happen in that incident is important. And the notion of being a poet laureate. I don't know if I've interviewed poets laureate before. I'm trying to scan my brain, and I'm not sure I have.
Sam Green, Claudia Luna?
Claudia. Claudia a couple of times. So Claudia, yes. So I guess she's the only one.
Right.
And we talked a little bit about that, but I suspect I'm going to get a little different angle from you. However, the hate crime is the important thing. Maybe that's a good place to start.
Sure. So I think it was maybe like a year into my laureateship, there was this event. There was this incident that happened. A woman, Leanna Cookley Spring, had a consignment shop called, I think it was called Rags to Riches on the East Side. And there was a young white man who showed up in her shop, acted really weird and sketchy, and then he left really abruptly. And she found that he had abandoned what she assumed was a bag of clothing in the store. And when she and her son went to look at the abandoned belongings to see if maybe they could then figure out how to return them to him, they found what was a Ku Klux Klan robe. And so there was an investigation. Nobody was ever able to track down the individual who abandoned the clothing and the robe. And eventually she decided to close her store. It was probably maybe 8 or 9 months, I feel like, after that event happened. But it was, I feel like, this moment in Redmond's sort of public imagination. I think Redmond fancies itself as a pretty diverse, liberal city. There are many immigrants and people of color who are attracted to Redmond for the different sort of professional opportunities. And so I think that this was a moment when Redmond had to kind of face itself and to kind of look at itself. And what did it mean that racism occurs, you know, in your town, in your neighborhood? And I decided that I wanted to write this poem. So for me, so being in this poet laureateship, relating to this city but not living in it, I felt like I had some sort of obligation or responsibility to use poetry to respond to the thing that had happened, to make some sort of statement. And so I wrote the piece that I did, and we talked about it, the city and I discussed ways in which that work could be shared, whether, they would roll it out during African American Month, February. I think it was around the time that all these things were happening. And because the poem alluded to details of the investigation, which, by the way, I found in news stories, they were public, it was determined by the marketing department for the city that it shouldn't be shared. Which I can't disagree with that. That's fine, but as long as it was an active investigation, it meant then that I'd written this piece with which I really could do nothing with, and that felt really, I don't know what the word is.
Shitty is one word that comes to mind.
And it wasn't even frustrating. It was like it felt. And it's not censoring either, but it's like when you are a public artist, right? I'm a public artist that is paid by the city, by taxpayers' money. There's a way in which they own you. They own your work. What you make is for them, right? So they have ownership, and if they don't want to use it or, you know, they want to kill it, they have that right to do that. But what is then the relationship to the greater truth or the thing that needs to be said? So I think it was maybe a year later that we finally figured, you know, okay, the time has passed, the investigation is closed, you know, everybody's kind of moved on. And we ended up deciding that, I decided that I was going to make a textile. I was going to have the words embroidered into a cloth. And that for me was a way to reclaim the notion of the textile. Ku Klux Klan robe, you know, wanting to sort of evoke that fabric and texture, that textile, and to treat it in a different way. I actually wanted to go to Leona and ask her if I could have the robe, but she had already burned it by the time I was like, I think I want that robe to make into something. So went a different direction, had the words machine stitched, and you know, did it in red thread for me, trying to evoke some idea of like bloodline or like lineage or kinship. And the thing that we decided to do was to display that textile during a public civic festival for the arts during the summer, in which I also designed an interactive embroidery booth. So the idea was that I sort of curated out lines and verses of poems related to racial tolerance, and I also took lines from the city's inclusion resolution, which is like a policy that they passed around, like well, it's more like a statement of values around how they feel about inclusion. I took a section of that and I kind of took these phrases and pre-populated them on templates of cloth, where people coming to the booth could then hand embroider, hand stitch these phrases and walk away with a finished embroidery. So that was the idea there, to get them to engage with language, to have them kind of go through that practice or exercise of embodying language through working with it, and the kind of language being very specific to my values around racial tolerance.
Your poem's in the book.
Yeah, it's in the book.
Do you want to read that poem?
Yes. It's not as readable.
I noticed, because it's basically a photograph. There it is right there, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Same cloth, a poem for Leona Coakley Spring. The white robe, a length of rope, a pointed hat, hate symbols, evidence of a message much louder than go back to where you came from. There are people here who will hurt you, a veiled threat that burns bright as any wooden cross planted in the earth, as if to stake a claim. What if we were to sow seeds of solidarity for a stranger, public victim of a hate crime, the black business owner who believed the best about another human, instead of recognizing the glory suit for its cut-out eye holes, saw a choir robe, to sing the holy gospel, to know this neighbor by her name, to recover some deeper meaning of clan.
So many different things also that I could say about that. Poet speaking truth to power. If you are a poet, would you agree with the statement? If you're a poet who has to speak truth to power, applying to be a poet laureate is probably not a good position for you.
It's complicated.
It's
super complicated. I mean, you are given a platform to reach a large populace, and you are entrusted with tax dollars that can fund the things that you want to do. But public art, the public art process is very different in that it involves the feedback and often influence of other people besides yourself as the creative originator. It requires that you actually collaborate with communities and municipalities, and it in this way isn't something I would necessarily recommend for every poet that I know. It isn't something I'd necessarily recommend for you.
You were going to say that.
However, if you have certain tools if you have certain skills in your toolbox, and you are able to negotiate these complex politics and collaborate with these communities in order to see the work to its end, it's quite powerful. I mean, I was able to project a poem about the environment during an outdoor festival, and maybe 10,000 people saw that piece. My work is included in the Redmond Connector bike trail. in a sort of semi-permanent artwork that's activated by the rain and will be there for years, hopefully. And those are tremendous opportunities that I wouldn't have been able to fund or do on my own, but they are accessible to a greater public, and that's super meaningful.
Fair enough. The title chapter is the last one, and I'm wondering if you could read extensively page 138, the first three paragraphs on page 139, and then the poem that follows on page 141.
138, 139.
So right there, from there to there, and then the poem.
The whole thing? Or the whole poem? Or just the first page?
Yeah, that first page. Okay. Well, I mean, whatever you feel is appropriate.
Okay. And so, poetry is the highest form of communication that can exist between two individuals. It is, in fact, a form of right speech. Poetry is prayer, invocation, overture, and claim, a fundamental act of defiance through speaking the world into being. On completion. We took our turns at the altar, placing offerings we brought to leave behind. A piece of fabric cherished by her long-deceased mother, handmade drawings, a protective amulet, the widow's gold marriage band. I placed sheets of Chinese gray paper on the second tier of the Mexican ofrenda and wrote my teacher's name, Bill Scheffel, on a blue post-it note. He left the world through self-immolation on July 8, 2018. I started writing Enso before my teacher's death and completed it during a long year of grieving and looking inwards. Once, I believed that I had no ambition, or rather, I misunderstood it entirely. I thought that the privilege of the gift is to simply practice whether or not that work circulates in the world. But there is much wrapped up in the sharing of one's creative and cultural practices, as they can express the best parts of being human, the wisdom we have the opportunity to glean for ourselves and transmit to another. A gyotaku is a fish rubbing, the traditional art of making prints from the body of a dead fish. As an aside, it's not uncommon to make prints from the placenta of one's newborn. After the shock of going on a squid fishing expedition, it was the idea of the gyotaku that sparked Enso. It was the death portrait I needed to compose, about the experience of seeing a life extinguished before my own eyes, to come to terms with what needed to be examined within me to evolve towards a different understanding of devotion. Enso. An artist inserts ink under skin, shows you how to see artistry in his craft. What's discerned from studying claws of a dragon, finely drawn lines in the form of waves, appearance of lotus and cherry blossom in one flowering gesture, asynchronous.
I don't know what there is to say after that. I wish you great success with the book, and it's really been a delight to engage you in this way, and I'm grateful for that.
Thank you for talking to me. Thank you for caring.